Good morning. Welcome to Husky Nation News, right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. This broadcast is in collaboration with the UConn newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn student-run TV station, UCTV. I'm your host, Sarah Lershani, and here's the news of the University of Connecticut from this week. Former FBI Director James Comey visited UConn and talked about what he thinks an ethical leader is. Take a listen.
Students burst into laughter as former FBI Director James Comey recounted his unexpected firing in May 2017 during a speech at the Jorgensen Center for the Performing Arts last Monday. Comey spoke on ethical leadership in the current political landscape at this year's Edmund Fusco Lecture, moderated by University of Connecticut President Susan Herbst. Comey says since his firing, he's been on a mission to share with others what ethical leadership should look like. He says the example set by the current political climate has been filled with lies and deceit and is unhealthy for the growth of this country. Maybe I can use my voice to paint a picture of what it should look like, Comey says. He says that an ethical leader should possess two sets of qualities. They should be kind and harsh and confident and humble. He also says that President Donald Trump is like a wildfire that is bringing pain and destruction to the country, and that in order to grow, citizens have to awaken the giant by confronting the destruction, getting involved, and voting. The former FBI director expressed how at the time of his firing, he thought agents at the Los Angeles Bureau were playing a trick on him when he noticed news stations on the TV screen announcing his alleged resignation and later his firing. At this point in my life, believe it or not, I felt tremendous job security, Comey jokes. He expressed that he had worked to keep an arm's distance from Trump due to the nature of his position and explains how former presidents understood that distance between the FBI director and the president was a necessity. The guy did not like me, and I was okay with that, Comey says. Our relationship since before he became president was a series of efforts by him to pull me close and me to push away. He would try to hug me, I would push away. Trump, he says, did not know anything about leadership and is neither humble nor confident. Ethical leadership isn't about decisions, it's about the way you make decisions, Comey says. Max Seyfried, a junior political science major, says Comey's speech is compelling.
I think he did a pretty good job at connecting to the audience. He got, you know, a lot of people laughing, a lot of people engaged, which I think is important when you're talking about something, especially something as divisive as leadership in the current political climate.
Despite his criticism of the current president and the lack of leadership, Comey says he's optimistic about the future of the country. He says that optimism lies in people who are now choosing to get involved rather than withdraw. For WHUS News, I'm Sarah Lershani.
In other news, in recent years, the University of Connecticut has taken measures to ensure local habitats are preserved, especially on the approximately 4,000 acres of land it owns around the main campus, which is mostly forest or farmland. Daily Campus correspondent Natalie Ballacher reports UConn's land is a great habitat for many animals, including squirrels and chipmunks. Environmental Policy Director Richard Miller says, "When we built Discovery Drive a few years ago, we made sure to include two bridges over the areas that serve as wildlife corridors for everything from deers and bobcats to wood frogs and salamanders." Miller says the structure of the new area around Discovery Road allows for the safety of animals. He says it makes it harder for smaller animals to get stuck on the road. Also, this new structure is helpful in preserving plants, grass, and agriculture. One of the most popular tools for distressing is pet therapy. Our very own Kara Murray reports that the Health Education Office in Wilson Hall hosts pet therapy every Wednesday from 4 to 7 p.m. and every other Tuesday from 2 to 5 p.m. Students say sitting with the dogs for even just a little bit has a significant impact on their mood. Junior Katie Marble says, pet therapy helps her miss her dog a little less. She says it's not exactly the same, but it does make her feel a lot better when she's stressed. Murray reports several studies, including one done by the American Journal of Health, found that pet therapy was a useful coping mechanism for college students. In other news, state troopers responded to 26 active disturbance calls, party or loud neighbor complaints so far this fall. Daily Campus correspondent Sashin Menon reported on the story. Resident State Trooper Sergeant Keith Timmy, says those calls resulted in 4 arrests and several tickets for nuisance violations at this week's Mansfield Town Council meeting. Timmy is working with university community relations to minimize the impact of students on the Mansfield community. Timmy says the fall has been a tremendously busier time of year for us with the off-campus partying. Mansfield Town Council member David Freudman is worried that these meetings with students are a form of discrimination. He says student renters in the town of Mansfield are a minority, and he says they are being targeted. Councilman Ben Shakian says college students are not a part of the list of people the federal discrimination laws cover. William Perez was sworn in as the new fire chief of the University of Connecticut Fire Department at its annual promotion and recognition ceremony last week. Daily Campus staff writer Gabriela De Benedictis reports the ceremony honored and recognized the work of the department and was held in the public safety complex at 3 p.m. UConn spokesperson Stephanie Reed says Perez is receiving a warm welcome to the university and that Perez has great talent and knowledge to fit his new job. Formerly, Perez worked with the East Hartford Fire Department for 25 years and eventually became the assistant fire chief. He is currently also a doctoral candidate at the University of Hartford. In other news, a new mobile app by the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, more commonly known as FAFSA, may help busy students and parents complete their application on the go. Daily Campus correspondent Fiona Brady reports that the My Student Aid app will be available for the 2019-2020 application. UConn Office Compliance and Quality Assurance Associate Director Carrie Fernandez says it allows for students to start the FAFSA on their own phone, and then the parent can complete the FAFSA on their phone for a seamless application process. The app is available for both iPhones and Androids, and also allows students and parents to manage past aid history, view school information, among other things. The deadline for the FAFSA application for the next academic year is March 1st, 2019. That's all the news we have this week. We'll now be going into a short break before starting the talk segment of our show, where we'll be talking to Max Seyfried, the vice president of the UConn College Democrats, about Comey's speech.
Huskies ready to delve into the world of diplomacy can find a seat waiting for them with the UConn Travel Model United Nations. Get trained in public speaking, negotiation, and networking so you can take on a role in different kinds of diplomacy scenarios, like the UN General Assembly and historical events, like the French Revolution. Hone these skills across the United States at competitive conferences where you can be a diplomat, build professional skills, and travel. Meetings are on Mondays at 7:30 p.m. in Monteith, room 319. And check out tmun.org for more information. You are listening to WHUS Stores.
And we are back from that short break. We'll now be moving into the discussion portion of our news show. Please note, from this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or license of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. I'm in the studio with Max Seyfried, who is also the VP of the College Democrats. Hi, Max. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing, Sarah?
Good. To start off, just tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I'm Max. I'm a junior political science major. I'm the vice president of UConn College Democrats here. I've done campaign work in the past. I've also worked in political offices, a Senate office in the state of Connecticut. And I just really enjoy the American political system.
All right, so we're here to actually talk about James Comey's speech from Monday the 15th.
Mm-hmm.
His speech was about being an ethical leader, and I think it's a pretty politically divisive environment. So just to start off, what did you think about his speech? And
I mean, I thought his speech was pretty compelling. I think he did a pretty good job at connecting to the audience. He got, you know, a lot of people laughing, a lot of people engaged, which I think is important when you're talking about something, especially something as divisive as leadership in the current political climate.
All right, before we get into what he said, you know, an ethical leader should be, how would you define ethical leadership?
I think I side with him for the most part. I think, you know, an ethical leader is somebody who can look at their own flaws, surround themselves with people that complement those flaws, that mitigate them, and can work well with people to kind of work to a consensus about a general step, a general move forward, and not just for, you know, something as grand as the United States, but something even less so, like a company or group project or something like that. It's all about consensus and making sure that there are people that, at least there are some people that agree with you.
So to just kind of give some background, some of the things that Comey sort of kept getting on was sort of this parallel between characteristics. So one of the things that he was talking about was the idea of being confident but also humble, and this idea of being kind but also sort of being stern. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think that's incredibly important in a leader, mostly the confident and humble, I think, because, of course, you don't want somebody who's going to be, you know, somebody who's going to be bashful in their leadership, somebody who's going to be quiet when they need to be, outspoken. But along those same lines, I think being humble is something he talked about a lot in the context of the current administration, because we do see a lot of bravado and we do see a lot of overconfidence, I would say. But there's not a lot of humility. There's not a lot of, you know, admission when you're wrong. I think that dichotomy of traits is certainly the more important of the two. I think being kind and being stern is also important, but I think if you don't have the balance between being confident and being humble, then there's no point in having the dichotomy between being stern and being kind.
So my question is, you obviously mentioned the fact that we don't really see that often. What do you think the consequences of, you know, this bravado that we're seeing in the current political climate from either side? What do you think the consequences of that are?
I mean, obviously, I'm a bit partisan. I think the bravado tends to land mostly with the chief executive at this point. And I think bravado in any sense of leadership, like unchecked, unfettered bravado, is dangerous. I think the higher you go in that leadership, the more dangerous it becomes. And it, in essence, it's because there's, once you're able to continue to act like that and nobody checks you on it, nobody calls you on it, then you're going to start to feel like you can get away with more. And the more you get away with, and the, you know, the more it descends into just kind of, bravado is a good word. But it's more than that. It's almost a cockiness that's kind of developed at this point. And you no longer see an ability to relate to people, to, you know, to speak the way other people do, to speak to, you know, the other side. Because when you are that overconfident, you think that the only way is right, is your way, and you won't listen to anybody else. And especially when you're a leader, that becomes so, so dangerous. Because you are, you know, I think 54% of the United States voted for somebody other than Donald Trump. And to say that, you know, to take his bravado and say that he speaks for 100% of us, when he has really been speaking just to the people that got him elected for the last 2 years, it's scary. It's scary and it's dangerous.
So I'm actually going to cycle it back a little bit to Comey and Trump, because I don't know if you got the sentiment, but when he was speaking, he very heavily sort of admired Barack Obama and his leadership skills. And he might have not had the nicest things to say about Trump, although maybe not directly. How do you feel that tension between him and Trump, or him and Obama? How do you think that plays out in sort of the executive branch, or the way politics or even investigations play out from that higher up level?
Mm-hmm. So I think Director Comey, while he was director of the FBI, did a very, very good job at not letting those tensions play out, at least not publicly. I think now that he's a private citizen, he's more than entitled to say what he would like about his relationship with either president. And I don't worry at that level, like at the level of director of the FBI, especially with somebody like James Comey, who's been in public service for not the majority, but a good portion of his professional life. I don't worry with someone like that, with someone in that kind of situation, that much about partisanship, about, you know, laying on one president during investigations more than you would another because you don't like them. However, I also tend to, especially with the Inspector General's report, that kind of said that his actions around October 28th, with the release of the, you know, the letter that said they were reopening the investigation into Hillary Clinton. I do feel that he was out of line with that, but I don't necessarily think that it was because of tension with President Obama or the lack thereof with, at the time, candidate Trump. I think that was more just a mistake. I don't think there was partisan leanings because of relationships on either side.
Now, kind of speaking about the October 28th, he mentioned that if he, you know, he obviously regrets sort of the outcome, but he also said that if he went back in time, he still wouldn't change his actions. Do you agree with that?
No. The Inspector General's report said that what he did was essentially that he should have reversed course. He shouldn't have done it. He should have waited until after the election. I believe that to be true. I think that at that point, you know, she had already been investigated and cleared a couple of times, and another investigation, which also did not result in, you know, in any kind of legal repercussions, for Secretary Clinton. I just think that announcement was mismanaged.
Do you think our political climate would be different, had those specific actions not been taken?
Yes, I think Hillary Clinton would probably be president. I think that was probably enough. That whole situation was probably enough for the people on the fence about voting for candidate Trump to kind of kick over. Because what you did see in the 2016 election was a lot of people were undecided up until November 6th or November 8th. And people were almost looking for an excuse not to vote for Hillary Clinton, and they got it. The October 28th letter let them off and let them say, oh, but, you know, we wouldn't have known. And then we did, and we found out she's, you know, still not liable for what she did. So
let me ask you a hypothetical question, and I hate to ever do this, but do you think that if Hillary Clinton was elected, do you think we'd still be having sort of that partisan hypertension conflict that we see with the Trump administration, but maybe in the reverse order?
So I think yes and no. I think during the Obama administration, during the 8 years that he was president, you saw an increased divide in partisanship in the United States. Of course, the middle has grown. People who are independents that don't affiliate with either party have grown. That number's grown considerably since the 40s, steadily and considerably since the 40s. But on the polls, you have people on the left who really believe in the Democrats' message. You have people on the right that really believe in the Republicans' message, and they have become increasingly different. They just have, on gun control, on education, on public funding, on infrastructure. It's just different. It just is. And I think the nature of partisanship would have been the same. I think it would have and will continue to divide, but I just don't think it would be the same. And the reason I don't think it would be the same is I don't think you saw Secretary Clinton use near the kind of divisive rhetoric that now President Trump does, and then President-elect and candidate Trump did.
I'm going to sort of cycle this back a little bit to ethical leadership, and more specifically, we're in the middle of a midterm election, and so Comey has sort of brought up this idea of, you know, young people sort of getting out and participating. Mm-hmm. How does that sort of translate to the current state of, you know, we're less than a month away, less than a couple of weeks away from a midterm election?
Yeah, so I think the term he used was awakening the giant, something to that effect. And I think he spoke largely to a greater anxiety, right, to people's fear that their voices won't be heard, that they won't be counted in the same way as their peers. And to that effect, to the effect that Comey spoke to everybody's underlying anxieties that, you know, that they'll be misrepresented or not represented at all, I highly encourage everybody to go out and vote, because I think that anxiety is real. I think it's palpable. I think you can feel it. And insofar as, you know, people our age, the younger generation, the millennials, we're projected to vote at less than 25% in the midterms this year. And if we vote, we're the largest voting group. So if we voted at the same rates that people over the age of 65 voted, if we voted at the same rates as, you know, people 50 to 65 voted. I highly doubt we would have the same problems and the same kind of anxieties, but the only way to change that is going to be, you know, to borrow his phrase, to awaken the giant.
Now, I have another question that sort of deals with ethical leadership, but more on sort of the college level. So you're obviously involved with the College Democrats. Mm-hmm. What does active sort of awakening the giant on the collegiate level, how does that look like? And, you know, what should college students really be doing to be, or even if they should be, politically aware or politically active?
I would love for everybody to be politically aware and politically active. I think the more people we can loop into the process, the cleaner and more effective the process will be. And I think on a college campus especially, one of the most effective things you can do is learn how to effectively organize to get your friends, or start at a more simple level, to get yourself and your roommate out, to get yourself and your roommate excited about something and to get you out in public speaking about that. And after that, it's going to be about your friends and your family members and getting them as excited or as angry or as upset about the issues that you care about. That's really where it starts. It starts with yourself, and then kind of learning how to communicate that message of, hey, we really need to support this, or we really shouldn't support that. And then, because you have to find, it takes a lot of self-reflection, especially in college, to say, this is what I believe, and then to have the self-awareness to say, and this is why I believe it. And then it takes a lot of practice to try and communicate that message effectively to other people to try to convince them of the same thing.
So that's actually leading into my next question. How do we sort of have open or ethical debates? I don't think ethical is the right word, but how do we have sort of productive conversations with people who may have opposing views to sort of reach a conclusion? This may be idealistic, that sort of works for everybody. Or is that even possible?
So I think that might be a little bit idealistic, because there's always going to be somebody who's upset in a compromise, right? And I think the nature of a compromise is that everybody's a little bit upset, but they also all feel at least a little bit satiated by the result. And I think insofar as how to have those kinds of debates, it is 100% about respect. I think it's something that's lacking in the current political climate. It's a lot of, I'm right, you're wrong, and I'm not going to listen to you. And I think, generally speaking, that's something that I haven't experienced until now, and it might just be because now I'm more politically involved than I was before, but I think part of it also is the fact that we, you know, as Americans look to the president for a role model, and, I mean, just generally speaking, I don't think that's a particularly ridiculous thing to say. We look to the president to set an example, and our president currently is not good at fostering respectful, meaningful conversations about what we do and do not believe. And if we can't have those conversations, you know, as leaders, as presidents, as senators, as members of the House of Representatives, as governors, as, you know, any kind of elected office or anybody in a leadership position, if you can't have that kind of conversation, then nobody should expect that kind of conversation to exist below that level either. It's much harder to do when you're, you know, when you're not well-versed in policy and debate and, you know, other things, and still have that kind of conversation. And when we look to see how to do it, right, from professionals, and we see that they don't respect each other, how am I supposed to expect anybody to respect the views that I have?
I'm going to backtrack a little bit, because in that response, you sort of mentioned that you've sort of recently become politically active or politically aware. So sort of, I guess, want to talk about your own experience of becoming politically active and politically aware, and like when that started and how you sort of got to this point. Because I know earlier you were mentioning how much you love politics.
Yeah. So I think political interest generally started for me in, I don't want to oversell it, but I think somewhere around elementary school. There's a comedian I really liked who made topical political jokes, and I think that got me interested. And then in middle school and high school, my favorite subject was always history. And in high school, I remember the 2012 re-election campaign for Barack Obama, and though I wasn't involved, I do wish I could have been, because I do remember watching the news and watching the debates and reading about it. But I would say the moment where I really chose to become politically active was the 2016 election. I was actually a finance major for the first year I was at the university. After the 2016 election, during the 2016 election, I was taking a class called Intro to American Politics. And I think that in conjunction with feeling upset and feeling like I didn't have an outlet, pushed me to become more involved. And after that, it became, I looked for internships, I looked for ways to volunteer on campaigns, I looked for ways to work on campaigns. And since then, politics has really been all that I do. It's all that I read about, it's all that I, you know, I listen to podcasts in the car, all the podcasts I listen to are about politics. I try to stay as involved as I can, and it all stems from being upset and feeling like I didn't have an outlet.
And so for, I mean, you already mentioned how you feel like students that might be in that place should be encouraged to participate, but how does that process look like for any other student that might be in your shoes at the time of the 2016 election or even now?
Mm-hmm. So I know, like, a lot of my friends that I've met through politics, the moment of change and the moment of either, you know, increased interest or the start of interest generally was the 2016 election. And it all starts kind of by asking questions. Like, I didn't know how to get involved when I first started. I didn't know how to get onto a campaign, how to get any kind of internship. I didn't know what the path to a career in politics was. And it's all about asking questions. For me, it started with the professor of the Intro to American Politics class. This is Professor David Yaloff. And I spoke to him after class. I was like, hey, professor, you know, I really want to switch my major to political science, but I'm worried and my dad's worried that there aren't any jobs with political science.
That's like most people's concern with any major.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. And, you know, starting by asking questions about careers, and then that kind of led me to ask friends and mentors and people I met through things on the university, things like College Democrats, about how to get more involved. It's all about asking. It's all about trying to make connections and just seeing what is going to end up working for you.
All right, so I'm actually going to bring you back to Comey because we did start over there. For you, it's an open-ended question. Who do you think right now is an example of either Comey's definition or your own definition of an ethical leader? Who's the prime example for that for you?
So I think Comey made a good point in reaching back and saying Barack Obama is a good, if not great, embodiment of an ethical leader. And I mean, in my opinion, he's one of the best we've ever had. He's, you know, not only a fantastic orator, but he never dipped deep into the well of divisive rhetoric and tried to just, you know, bash his opponents at face value. There was always a debate about something, and you look at his relationships with prominent Republicans, like former Speaker of the House John Boehner, and you have to say there's a humility there, and there's also a confidence. I don't think anybody would say Barack Obama wasn't a confident leader. Now, moving forward, though, I think I look to people like Senator Warren, people like Senator Booker, people like Senator Kamala Harris, people who have, you know, time and time again fostered meaningful political debate, not just dipping into rhetoric of I'm right, you're wrong, and I'm not going to talk to you, but people who can foster meaningful political debate while also kind of controlling, you know, there's still a sense of confidence there. There's still an air of astuteness there.
All right. Well, is there anything else you feel I should know? Anything else that you're just dying to say that I might have missed?
Not really. I would just encourage everybody to take their anxiety and take their passions and their worries, and turn that into action during the midterms, just because there really is no other outlet. Short of that and short of volunteering, that's just about it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sitting down and speaking with me. I had a great time. I hope you did too.
Yes. Thank you so much, Sarah.
No problem.
All right. Well, thank you to all of you for listening in on the show. Thank you to the Daily Campus for collaborating with us. And thank you to Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I've been your host, Sarah Lershani, and you're listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Have a great day.